610-583-1057. Joining us now, longtime friend of mine, the pride of Kingsville, Maryland, Steve Molesky. Steve, how you doing?
Exactly. Yes, that was my youth. Now I'm in beautiful Harford County.
Well, I got the Kingsville in there, so that was my goal today. Like I said, we've known each other a long time, and I truly believe this is the first time we've ever appeared together.
Well, I mean, it's well overdue and needs to happen more often.
Well, see, now I thought that would be an interesting talking point, and apparently it's not. But anyway, we were talking just now about the Orioles over the weekend in Chicago, and they're sending out that patchwork ragtag group, and I was watching just, you know, because I was interested in that, but they ended up being competitive games. It was kind of almost stirring to watch.
Well, I think if you're a fan right now, your directions are multitasking because you're watching some of these new guys in the minors. How are the new arrivals doing? And you're watching the young guys in the majors. I mean, that's the real attraction right now. I mean, barring a miracle, the Orioles are out of it. And that's why they made all these trades. And you're also watching for Basayo and Beavers. I think they're going to be up before the end of the month. The team will never say this is PPI related or rookie eligible related. They just can't. But, it has to be. They'll get him enough games, my guess is, this year to really get a bit of an evaluation for next year. So I think the end of the year could still be intriguing in many ways.
Steve, I want to ask about Jeremiah Jackson, and he's been one of those guys that has kind of popped up here after the deadline. He had a really good series out in Chicago, but you go and look at his minor league numbers, he's been pretty consistent. This year he's got over 800 OPS and only played 40 games in AAA, but he's got over 1,000 OPS during that time as well, with 11 home runs as well out in Norfolk. I mean, is Jeremiah Jackson a guy that we should be keeping a close eye on?
I just don't know. He was a guy who couldn't get out of Double A forever. And I saw him play at Double A earlier this year. And they told me in Bowie that he was a real leader on that team and was taking some of the younger guys under his wing. And they really liked having him, and he was hitting pretty well, but not great. And then he bumped him to Triple A and he was hitting great. He went to Triple A and he just exploded. So they're giving him a look here now. The disappointing thing to me is they're giving him a look in the outfield where he has to play.
Right.
It's like, why make the degree of difficulty better? But, you know, they got Jackson, they got Gunner, they got Westberg, so no room at the end, and they want to get his bat in the lineup, and they're trying him out there. But, you know, he's a former highly ranked prospect back in the day with the Angels, and he's trying to kind of resurrect himself here, and he sure did at AAA.
On the morning show this morning, Rob had on Mike Bordick. And Bordick said the rest of this season is going to be a tryout camp. You agree with that?
Yep, I sure do. And I think we're looking at the bullpen now. I mean, I feel really good. I don't know if they're going to make it or not. I'm just personal human emotions. I feel good that Cade Stroud and Houston Roth are on this team. I'll tell you why. They were drafted in 2019.
Wow.
They have had a long wait to get to the majors. They were drafted with Adley and Gunner. Maverick Hanley was in that draft. Joey Ortiz was in that draft. And these guys have been pitching all this time trying to finally get to Baltimore, and these trades allowed spots for them. And I don't know if they're going to do well or not. I mean, so far, Stroud's done okay. We haven't seen Roth, but he pitched well this year on the farm. So, yeah, tryout camp, opportunity galore for some of these guys.
Steve, Trevor Rogers, another gem from him on Friday out in Wrigley. Obviously wasn't able to get the team to win that day, no fault of his own. But what do you make of just the year Trevor Rogers has had? And now after this, how are you looking at him going forward?
I think he's pitching his way clearly into their 2026 plans. And now you're hoping that Bradish can come back and Kramer keeps pitching well. And now you got three. And obviously we can't count on Grayson, but we can hope on Grayson. And then somewhere around those three or four, they got to add to it this winter. Now, I mean, there's still guys on the fringes like Povich who could pitch his way in. And we'll see him tonight in Philly. But I'm not sure he's one of their top five going forward. I really like Cordell. I think I've told you this. the guys at Bowie right now. I keep calling them Bowie. Their name would change to Chesapeake. Chesapeake Gray Sox. But, I mean, I'm going to have on my podcast this week, getting a quick plug here, steveonbaseball.substack.com. This week I'll have Trey Gibson on this podcast. I think he's the best pitcher in the Oriole farm right now. Levi Wells is throwing well there. Nestor Hermann is throwing well there. Juwan Rotz-Brown had a rocky one yesterday there, but he's there now. I mean, I think the collection of arms at Chesapeake is the best in the farm right now. And, you know, some of these new guys, Wellington Arocena, I watched pitch for Delmarva. He's now at Aberdeen. He threw a gem, 20 years old, throwing 97 out of the Dominican. So they got some guys worth watching.
You know, you're one of the experts on minor league baseball. And, you know, as you know, I covered a lot of minor league baseball, too. So I admire that because that information is not always readily available. Given that, Frederick and Aberdeen are swapping next year. Frederick is coming back into the Oriole organization. I feel bad for the folks at Aberdeen, but I'm pretty thrilled for the people in Frederick. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I share those sentiments because I was the broadcaster of the Ironbirds.
I remember.
I was a second radio guy way back in the day, and I worked in Frederick when I got out of college at Towson in the 80s. I love Frederick, and I say a wrong was righted here because they lost that team because their facility was dilapidated, and now it's getting $40 million in upgrades, and it probably needs more than that. I think the owners of the team admit that. But it's going to look a lot better opening day, 2026. It'll be MLB ready. And this team, this community, was first or second in the Carolina League in attendance the last 8 years of the Frederick Keys before the contraction, which was before 2021. So a wrong has been righted here. Frederick is one of the best baseball communities I know. They will support that team in huge numbers. They love the Orioles. They'll be so excited to have Oriole players again in Frederick. And Aberdeen's future, it's murky now. The draft league will be okay. It'll be fun to watch. It won't be the same. And we don't know beyond next year what's going to happen there. And I've been to many Ironbirds games this year, Bruce, and no one's going. It's been that way for years. I don't know what happened. But no one goes. I won't say no one because that's ridiculous. So there are people there. But it's just very depressing in Aberdeen. I hate to say it. But it's the fact.
Steve, we had a caller earlier that wanted to talk about the outfield and the future of the outfield. And especially after the deadline, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot these days. But Colton Cowser, it seems like he is going to be a part of that outfield going into next year. Whether he's still in left field or maybe even playing center field still remains to be seen. But I feel like he is a part of their plans, at least for next year. I just don't know how sold I am on the long-term vision of Colton Cowser. He definitely does some good things, but his strikeout rate is very scary to me. His walks are going down. The power isn't there consistently. What are your thoughts on Colton Cowser and his future?
He tantalizes us with his talent from time to time. He can hit at 450. He leaps at the wall to make catches. He can get around out there well. So I think the team sees that too, and you don't give up on that. But you're right. This year, his strikeout rate too high, his walk rate too low. So there's a clear area to work on this winter. However they want to do drills or whatever they can do to help his plate discipline skills, it'll help him. Because it's hard enough to hit the strikes. When you try to hit the balls, you just got no chance. And so Colton, when he's chasing, it's not a good thing. We've got to work on hitting the breaking pitches. But I'm intrigued to see Dylan Beavers. And I'll tell you why. Yeah. Unlike some prospects, he can help you five tools. This guy can run. He's got more stolen bases than you think. The pop, he's been working on it for 2 years, increasing the pop. He's a good defender. So unlike Heston, who struggled on defense, I don't think Dylan Beavers will when he gets his chance. And he's paid his dues, man. His time has come. So I want to see if he can be the Oriole 2026 right fielder. And I think we're going to get a glimpse of that answer late this year.
Absolutely. Steve Molesky, great stuff as always, my friend. Thanks for finally being on with me. We'll see you real soon.
Thanks, Steve.
See you later.
Anytime, Bruce. Happy to do it. See
you later. Steve and I have a lot in common. We share a mentor. we share Richmond to start our careers. We could go on and just bore the hell out of you, but we're not going to do that. Coming up, we're going to do the whip around, and I'm going to talk about the 2018 Ravens draft and something about it that you may not realize. Cordell will weigh in, too. That's next on the Vinny and Haney Show.
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport.
Every game.
Everything.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Harford County.
Welcome back, Vinny and Haney Show. Bruce Cunningham, Cordell Woodland. And today, Cordell's going to be here for about another 40 minutes, and he's going out to training camp on a nice, cool day. We talked about this off the air, but way to go, Cordell. You're not going to die out there today.
No. I appreciate that from Mother Nature, man. We've had our fair share of scorchers already, but this weekend has been great.
I'll tell you a behind-the-scenes, inside training camp story that nobody uses anymore. When they were in Westminster, the deal was that the media could eat at the training table at 6:30 after all the players were done. Our newscast in Cordell was from 5:30 to 6. So we were done at 6. I learned Westminster that August because we drove around Westminster killing the clock for 6:30. Honest to God. 2018 draft. We've been teasing this a little bit. That's when they got Lamar. That's when they got Mark Andrews. They had a lot of talent in that draft. But Adam Schefter this morning reported that the 2018 draft class has now generated more money in future contracts than any draft class in NFL history. Let me repeat that. They've generated more money in future contracts than any draft class in NFL history. Hayden Hurst was the number one pick. He's making 7.25. Lamar was their second pick in the first round, who they traded for, $52 million. Orlando Brown Jr., $16 million. Mark Andrews, $14 million. Anthony Averett, $4 million. Deshaun Elliott, $6.25 million. Bradley Bozeman, $6 million. Zach Seiler, making $22 million. And he was the seventh-round draft pick that year. And then Darius Williams, Gus Edwards, both undrafted, making $10 million and $5 million annually. Cordell, as I told you earlier, you look at this list and you listen to how much they're all making, and that's really amazing when you consider they basically threw away their number one pick that year.
Yeah, I mean, Hayden Hurst ended up not being the guy. Mark Andrews, who they got in the third round, ended up being the better of the two, and they capitalized off the Hayden Hurst price tag at that point because they had Mark. And then you look, Bozeman center.
He's still playing.
Still playing, yeah. Really serviceable. As well, Zach Seiler just got paid this weekend.
Yeah, man.
Getting $22 million a year. Orlando Brown now on his third team now, I believe, still with the Cincinnati Bengals. But look, he's still a starting offensive lineman. He wanted to be a left tackle. That's what they paid him to be. So, you know, and then you've got guys like Deshaun Elliott, who's moved around quite a bit. But everywhere he goes, it seems like Elliott is still a starter.
Makes plays.
In every defense that he's a part of. So, Gus Edwards, same thing. Gus has been moving around for a while. I think Gus is obviously more on the back end of his career right now, but Gus has had plenty of good years. So, yeah, I mean, you look at this class, man, it is kind of
crazy,
eye-opening to see this stat come out about it.
It also speaks to the importance that the Ravens, who started with Ozzie, and Eric DaCosta is Ozzie's guy, so it continues under Eric, their importance and the weight that they put on scouting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at a list like this, it really testifies to that, doesn't it?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, every front office that's really good, their GM will usually give a lot of their scouts the credit. And Eric DaCosta, like you said, with Ozzie as well, they always bring up their scouts doing a really good job. And they do a good job vetting these guys. They obviously are watching them extensively to be able to get the information that they're getting on them. But, yeah, to be able to – this is something I think as a GM you hang your hat on. This is something be proud of, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, Basayo and Dillon Beavers are going to be Ravens or Orioles someday. How soon is it going to be? It's going to be pretty soon, actually. We're going to talk about that. Also, Cordell wants to talk SummerSlam. That's coming up next on Vinny and Haney. He let go a tantalizing line about their two best prospects that are down in Norfolk. He said that Samuel Basayo and Dillon Beavers are if they make it here in 2025, that would be a very good thing. That kind of tells me they're going to make it here. In case you're not following them right now, Basayo, he's hitting 271, 21 home runs, 54 RBI. This is in only 69 games. Those are pretty good numbers for 69 games. Dillon Beavers, they got him playing right field. 85 games, 16 home runs, 46 RBI, 307 batting average. Cordell, I understand why he's kind of anxious to see these guys perform at the major league level in 2025, but the game's going to be to try to make it as least pressure as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and the way that this year has gone is probably not a lot of pressure to go out there and necessarily help the team win. I think it's just really about getting comfortable, and they've been able, when you've seen the Orioles call up some of these big name prospects in the past and have struggled to get them playing time, they always kind of lean on the, well, we're trying to win right now, yeah, so we're fielding our best team. That shouldn't be the case, mm-mm, for these guys. That the runway should be open for them when they are eventually up here, especially Beavers,
yeah,
out in the outfield right now, because of so many questions going forward in terms of what your starting outfield is going to look like. He needs to get as much run as possible, but obviously you want Basayo's bat in the lineup every day, and I think in the long term he's going to stick most likely at first base. But right now you got Mayo there, yeah, so you know, I think they're going to, when he is up here, I think you'll see Basayo's bat in the lineup as much as possible. Where exactly he's playing in the field when he is in one of those nine,
right,
spots, that remains to be seen.
He's been playing a lot of first base down in Norfolk, but I'm going to tell you something. Part of me feels like if he comes up here and can play at this level, that they automatically now have an off-ramp for Adley if they want one.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't know if it was by design or not, but it could work out that way.
It might work out that way because, it, you know, and look, Adley has definitely still had some flashes to where he shows you what he is capable of, but he's a guy that I think they'd be lying if they said that they felt the same way about him today as,
right,
they did three years ago.
Let's be honest, Cordell. If you're the GM of the Orioles, are you giving him a big contract when his contract's up? I don't think
I am. Not right now.
No.
Not right now. You're not. And I mean, everybody's looking to see who is getting that first big contract from the Orioles. But
he wears number two on his back.
You would imagine.
He'll get the first big offer. Let's say that.
Offer, for sure. For sure. But yeah, I mean, I think they're in a good spot now, mm-hmm, with these guys coming up, especially when you talk about their catching dilemma right now. You couldn't be in a better spot with Adley trending the way that he has and then having Basayo in the darkness.
I thought that showed admirable restraint on the part of the Orioles. When they had all those catchers go down, they were six deep at one point. It would seem like, boy, we got to bring up Basayo, but they stayed patient. They resisted that urge, and it remains to be seen whether it's going to pay off or not, but I understand why they did that.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking their time to bring him up, and it seems like they've had a plan in place all along in terms of when they want to do it, and they're sticking to that. It's, and in my, for me, it's always felt like it would be on the back end of August, and maybe
September,
and even September. It wouldn't shock me at all. It's well known that they would love to get that comp pick again if he is to come up and win Rookie of the Year next year, same way they got with Gunner. So I fully believe that that is a part of their thought process as well.
From a business standpoint, we joked earlier that there are going to be a lot of empty seats in September. Basayo, Beavers might sell a few tickets.
Well,
for
yeah, him. It's all about the moments. And me and Ben have talked about this on our show, The Fresh Take. Like, that's what the second half is going to be about. Moments when you get these guys called up, Basayo and Beavers, or when Bradish inevitably makes a couple of starts here. Hopefully he can get a couple of starts at home under his belt, because I'm sure that's something that the fans would like to go out and see. But yeah, I think that's what it's about on a daily basis. It's not going to look like it did for the Savannah Bananas. It's just not. But I think in spurts, people, there will be certain moments down the stretch of the season that piques people's interest.
Absolutely. And the first 6 years it was open, they didn't have an unsold seat. 6 years worth of sellouts. But then that took them through 97, when they had a great team that nobody talks about anymore. And then they went into the wilderness after that. Mm-hmm. And two things happened. They went into the wilderness and the Ravens got here. And when the Ravens started rising, the Orioles started going down. It took the Orioles a long time to get back to that. They did under Buck in 2012. Those teams, they managed to bring it equal again. But I'm telling you, one of the best things about the last 2 years is that we were talking Orioles way up into October. Mm-hmm. That ain't going to be the case this year.
No, it's not the case. As soon as minicamp started, I mean, the hunger for football was through the roof, and it's definitely the case right now with training camp well underway. You got the first preseason game
Thursday
night, so football season is essentially here. And I think after the deadline that the Orioles just had, which they needed to have considering the season that they're having right now,
I agree,
unexpectedly so, you trade a lot of the favorite names away, people are going to start losing interest. That's just what's happening right now. But I do think people are going to keep their eye on it. The Orioles are just on the back burner right now. That's just what it is.
I call them, you watch your Orioles with the remote in your hand, you know, so you can you can switch and go back and forth. But yeah, there are going to be a lot of empty seats. And by the way, I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time. Congratulations on knowing how to say Norfolk. You know, I'm from down there, and when I hear Norfolk, it's like fingernails on the blackboard, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I can count maybe on one hand how many times I've been to Norfolk, but, you know, I take pride in being able to say the name right.
Norfolk. I used to go see Dr. J play the Virginia Squires down there.
Sure, it was a sellout.
Norfolk, no, ABA didn't sell out. There were no sellouts in the ABA, but that's another story for another time. 410-583-1057. As we mentioned, Cordell on his way out to Ravens camp, as he usually does spend a lot of time out there. And Al and Laurel wants to talk about Ravens depth. Al, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, actually, I'm from Baltimore. I lived in Laurel for a little bit, but I'm actually stationed out in Colorado right now. I'm wearing my Ravens gear right now.
Attaboy. Hat, shirt, what branch of the service?
Army.
Outstanding.
Yep, I'm in Fort Carson right now. I honestly, I have not listened to a Colorado radio station. I'm still on Maryland. Everyone on base literally calls me Baltimore. But, yeah, so what I wanted to get into, actually, earlier this morning when you guys were saying the importance of the Ravens defensive players, especially if they're rookies starting out special, I could not completely agree with you guys even more. I remember Ed Reed, his first 2 years in the league.
Yeah.
I remember how great he was on that team. I remember one Monday Night Football game, he returned a punt against the Bengals. The score was like 19-30. Ed took it back to the house. I believe it was like 60 yards and the time in India.
I knew we were going to lose him.
Yeah.
About a face mask, and he like literally laid it.
All right, Al, well, look, we thank you for calling, but we're going to lose you. But he does bring up Ed Reed as a rookie. That was a surprise draft pick. And one thing about Ozzie is he would surprise us every year at number one, because we always thought we had it handicapped, and he would always come out of nowhere. But Ed Reed, I'm glad he mentioned him. Ed Reed had that fast twitch thing going on, and he was the only Raven that I ever saw that had that until Lamar get here. But those two, they have that in common, fast twitch, and they can do things nobody else can do.
I mean, the movement on the field, Ed was just like a missile out there, just ready to run through somebody and knock them out of their pads or make a play on the ball. And obviously Lamar, you blink and you'll miss him. I mean, he has an ability that you can't teach. It's really all instinctual when it comes to his movement and his ability to kind of see out of his peripheral and see the threats that are coming and get out of the way and hit his top speed out of nowhere if he wants to get to his top speed. But he mentions Ed Reed, you know, being drafted and how great Ed was, and Ed earned his stripes on special teams as well.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see Malachi doing the same thing. Malachi, he's getting thrown out there with the defense, but you'll also see Malachi be a part of special teams also. I just think that's something that the Ravens will continue to do forever.
If Terrell Suggs goes into the Hall of Fame, some people think he will. He was Defensive Player of the Year 1 year. That means that three guys off that same defense will be in the Hall of Fame, and that all played in the same era. That's pretty remarkable.
I mean, and it wouldn't be surprising. It's long thought of to be one of the best defenses of all time, and obviously that 2000 defense still holds the crown, but the Ravens have multiple defenses that you can go to and say that's one of the greatest defenses of all time.
All right. We forgot about it up until this point, or I forgot about it. Tell me about SummerSlam.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, you know, it's a two-night event for the first time this year. Night one ended. It started great, and Nolan, you could back me up. It started great and ended great. You know, you get the Roman match at the beginning, but the ending was the chef's kiss, and I love the long game. We talked about patience, Ozzy talking about patience, and so many times, especially in this day and age with the internet, a lot of things get leaked out and probably causes them to rewrite the script or whatever the case is. But they did a really good job with Seth Rollins, who got injured a little bit ago, and he was kind of the main figure in the main storyline.
Is he the one that came out on crutches?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and he was even on NFL Network, and he had done interviews. He was on the Rich Eisen show, and he completely committed to the bit, and, you know, they shocked the world, and he comes out, and he had what was called the Money in the Bank briefcase, which is basically holds a contract of you can get a title shot anywhere, anytime against whatever champion you want. He comes out as soon as CM Punk, his arch nemesis, wins the title. He comes and takes it from him. That was a great ending to night one. Night two had I thought the better matches were a part of night two. Night two overall was really balanced. It ended great with John Cena and Cody Rhodes match. Nolan texted me before the show saying he hopes it goes uninterrupted, no run-ins. He got his wish, got a great match between those guys. And then Brock Lesnar comes back, which is kind of controversial, to be honest with you, considering everything that's gone on with the lawsuits with WWE and Vince McMahon. Brock's name is in there, but I'm assuming they think he's going to be cleared or whatever because they just brought him back last night. So he seems like he's going to be the next target for John Cena. But I thought it was a great event over the course of the weekend. It I was hoping to get clean. The Rock back, though, but obviously, why do I keep thinking waiting. He's coming back?
Yeah. Stay away as far as I'm concerned.
He's out of their price range now.
Well, no. Anytime he's got a movie.
He's just too busy.
You're right.
Which
about
he does what he wants. Yeah.
He has like that A24 movie that's coming out. Actually looks halfway decent. As far as a Rock movie, it looks pretty good.
You know, his father was Ray's teammate at Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't his father. He was Ray's teammate.
I'm about to say
he was. Knee problem, right?
Yeah, they've got a bunch of, you go through that bloodline.
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy.
Yeah.
In fact, it's 11:43. We could go right up to noon just listing literally. Guys that played at Miami in the 90s that became great big stars. All right, coming up, we're going to go to the Funhouse. That's next on the Vinny and Haney Show.
Quick Draws Funhouse. Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com. 105.7 The Fan.
A lot of thoughts on the Orioles here. We'll start with this one. Says, I think this weekend was case in point why Dylan Beavers and Sam Basayo need to be up here ASAP. The trades created dead spots in this lineup again, and I don't need to see a player like Dylan Carlson getting more play time than a prospect.
I don't have a problem with that take either. Although Carlson going forward is somewhat intriguing too. He's still a young guy. He's had some bright spots this year.
He can play a
switch
little bit.
Hitter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we talk about all the question marks in the outfield. He's going to be a guy that I think may be worth a look down the stretch, but I agree with the Texas overall point. Too many dead spots in the lineup, not just this weekend, but that's going to be the case going forward.
Oh, yeah.
And both of those guys, Beavers and Basayo, their bats are scorching hot right now.
It feels like there's naturally just more of a convenient fit for Beavers right now because of the roster holes. Mm-hmm. But Basayo, obviously the more intriguing
of
the two that you want to see up here. But they're going to really have to move pieces around to make that work because Mountcastle's back too.
Yeah.
Let's see. Another one here. This texter, Gene in Annapolis, says the disappointment and anger for the Orioles' deadline moves, not necessarily what happened on that day alone. It's what happened to this team for the past few years. Once on the cusp of a World Series, or at least appearing to do so, going deep in the playoffs, has now all come to an end. Last place team, full-on sellers. I don't have any confidence in Mike Elias to finish what he has started.
That's an interesting final sentence, because up until this year, Cordell, you wouldn't have heard anybody say that. You know, you really wouldn't. He was still the fair-haired boy, and I think some of the sheen has come off that rose this year as far as Mike Elias is concerned.
I think almost all of it is off.
I'm trying to be nice here.
Yeah, I think almost all of it is lost. Like the Texas said, when you have this deadline go the way that it did, and it needed to go this way because of how the season has gone, it does make you start to think back to the past and all the losing years, and then it's like, okay, we're winning the division, you're a 100-win team, you're hosting playoff games, we're on this thing is going up, and to kind of have the rug pulled from under you,
right?
You start thinking about getting swept in the postseason, you start to think about the lackluster trade deadlines when they were competitive, you start to think about this lackluster offseason, all of that stuff starts ringing in your head, and you see Stowers doing what he's doing out in Miami. It's just like, yeah, you start to think about more of the negatives and overlook some of the positives that are still around.
Be honest with me, though. I know I didn't expect it. Did you expect 9 players to be moved?
No, they actually went about the deadline the way that they were supposed to, and that in a sense surprised me. I'll admit, I thought that there would be a couple left over that they wouldn't get anything for, like the rumor at least was that they had a high asking price for O'Hearn. So I started to see that, and it got to the last couple of hours. I'm like, maybe he's going to make it. And obviously that didn't happen. Morton, too. That Morton deal wasn't announced until after 6 o'clock.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, they got rid of everybody that we thought would be a trade candidate.
Laureano was the biggest surprise on my part because he had a year's worth of control. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, I made some calls over the weekend. San Diego really put a lot of pressure on the Orioles to include him in the package, and that's how the package got so big.
I mean, yeah, San Diego is not a team that's afraid to deplete their farm system.
No.
We saw them do it for the Nats with James Wood and all those guys. They did it again this year. Right now, they're clearly going for it out there. I applaud them for it. It hasn't turned into a World Series yet, but that's what a lot of these prospects are for. They're not all going to be a part of your future,
right,
in terms of wearing that jersey.
Right.
Sometimes it comes as a trade asset.
There's even some talk that some of those guys they picked up on Thursday in those trades are going to be flipped. They're not
that wouldn't shock me. We've talked about how their rotations has a lot of questions. Their bullpen is completely decimated. I think a lot of these prospects that people were complaining about are in single A or double A.
Right.
They're going to be I think the Orioles are going to try at least to package them in deals.
It makes sense to me. All right, you're getting ready to head out to Owings Mills. You got both Todd Monken, Zach Orr, and Chris Horton talking today. That should be some interesting post-practice comments.
Oh, yeah. I always love to hear from Todd Monken specifically. He's very candid out there.
He's got that coach's voice, too.
Yeah. Todd is a good one to talk to. All of those guys are. So we talked to John. I know he's happy to get a break from us. So we'll talk to those guys and Patrick Ricard as well.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember. Well, you probably are. Zach Orr was a really good player.
Oh yeah, I look young. I'm not as young as I look, or I definitely don't feel as young as I look.
Don't give the secret away. Go ahead and just be young. But anyway, it was a pleasure working with you for the first time today.
For sure.
And I was going to say don't get sunstroke out there, but that's not going to be a problem today.
We're in a good stretch right now. We're going to enjoy this.
Enjoy that nice weather, right? All right, coming up hour number two of the hour number three of the Vinny and Haney Show, and it's just me. We're going to hear a lot from Nolan, though. I made that clear to him before I came in here. We're going to hear a lot from Nolan afternoon, and we'll take you up to 2 o'clock. So stick around, everybody. A lot more ahead.